In a world gone mad, only rationality and common sense can save it. It's Andrew and Jerry Save the World with your hosts, Andrew Langer and Jerry Rogers. And now, here's Andrew and Jerry.
Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Andrew and Jerry Save the World. Episode 79, Andrew and Jerry's Day of Visibility. I am Andrew Langer.
Jerry Rogers.
Jerry's looking Eeyore-ish. Are you okay, buddy?
I'm all right. I'm a little disappointed with the world. I think it's amazing, Andrew. I think it's really amazing how the White House can issue a proclamation, an official proclamation,
right,
and declaring Easter Sunday Transgender Day of Visibility. Now, I understand. Yes. I understand that this day was a day pre-selected. March 31st is apparently every year over the last, I guess, this long tradition of 2 or 3 years. Transgender Day of Visibility. However, the White House, given the fact that it was Easter, could have shown some sensitivity and perhaps waited until Monday to celebrate this, because as I think you pointed out to me, there are literally dozens and dozens, yes, and dozens and dozens of days throughout the year set aside for LGBTQ plus A, for transgender and the rest of it. And what really makes this a smack in the face to Orthodox peoples, people of faith, Christians in particular, is at the same time at the Easter celebration at the right. White House, the White House said no religious symbols in the Easter egg art contest.
Well, and let's keep in mind, at some point in time, the White House is going to drop the name Easter from this celebration.
Sure.
You know, this is where it is going. I'm going to make a Jerry Rogers level prediction that because Easter, you cannot, at the end of the day, you cannot separate Easter from its religious connotations is not the right word. It's religious origins. They are going to eventually simply call it the White House Spring Celebration or whatever, the celebration, right, of spring renewal, whatever they're going to do. That's eventually what's going to happen. You know, if not in the Biden administration, then in the Newsom administration or the President Westmore administration or whatever the next, you know, as we continue to refine the progressive hold on the White House, this is what's going to happen. But you're right. I mean, in the end, it's a situation in which the White House could have avoided this. They certainly could have avoided the negative story in which the president turns around and says, "Well, I didn't declare that it was the transgender day of visibility," and of course he did. So there was that gaffe that they had to deal with. But yeah, you know, it certainly they could have found a way around it. How about working with the LGBTQIA world and saying, you know, something? How about maybe you move the transgender day, the day you celebrate it, in the same way that the rest of us have changed the way we celebrate Washington's birthday and Lincoln's birthday to, you know, a date that is neither Washington's birthday or Lincoln's birthday that we now call President's Day. Why don't you change it to that? Or why don't you change it to the last Sunday in March?
Or the White House shouldn't recognize it.
Yes.
And let's be honest here. This is an exercise in stupidity, or an exercise in paganism, or an exercise in celebrating sin, or an exercise in celebrating mental health disorders. There ought to be a greater pushback against the transgender movement. I'm going through right now having to finish anti-harassment training for one of the corporations that I'm associated with, and the entire thing is offensive. It is a indoctrination seminar for forcing someone to accept the perversion, the kink, the delusion, the mental health problem of folks who believe that they are something that they're not. And again, reality doesn't matter. Science doesn't matter. It makes me laugh now whenever the left says, what about the science? They have abandoned science on climate change, on bioengineered food and technology. They've abandoned science when it comes to medicine and vaccines. They've certainly abandoned science when it comes to when life begins. And now they've abandoned science when it comes to gender and sex. This is all about faith for them. It's their religion. And frankly, we're sliding into paganism.
So it's interesting. Setting aside the paganism issue for a moment, because I want to come back to this. There is something very Orwellian about what is happening with things like this training that you are subjecting yourself to, and other folks I know who are going through similar kinds of training. Because, you know, there was a time not so long ago where if someone showed up at work and essentially was living their lives through the exposure of their sex life and their sexual preferences to those around them, that in and of itself would have been considered harassment and grounds for termination. And yet here we are now, within a scant couple of years, being forced to abandon everything that we were taught in the past. And now this is the present in which the parties' positions are the ones that are at work, and you must adhere to these things. Jerry, we're watching. I don't know if you've seen this yet. Do you guys still have Netflix in your house?
Sure.
So we're watching Three Body Problem. Have you heard about this?
I've heard about it, but I haven't watched it. You know, I know what is this? This is the unsolvable math equation when three bodies are trapped in a single orbit or something like this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's it's Newton's. You cannot predict the orbit if there are three major bodies that have a gravitational pull on one another.
Right.
And it's a whole issue. That's not the reason why I bring it up. I bring it up. It's a good series. We are 6 of the 8 episodes through. The point is, the show opens up, the first episode, the very beginning of the first episode, opens up in Maoist China at the height of the Cultural Revolution. And this physicist is watching her father be tortured by the party faithful. And there's a massive, again, Orwellian rally. And I say this knowing full well that Orwell's 1984 was fiction. And yet this is not that this is a true story, but essentially this is drawn from things that really happened in China at the time. And the point is, there is this, this physicist is being tortured on stage in front of the mob. And he's being made to adhere in a very, and I'm going to use this phrase, Jerry, and I know you're going to correct me on this, but like something out of the Inquisition of the, you know, the 15th century, is being forced to confess his sin. And the greatest sin is that despite the fact that he is a man of science and he's a physicist and an astrophysicist, because he talks about the Big Bang theory and the idea that something could pre-origin the Big Bang theory, it means that he allows for the possible existence of God. And that is the great failing, because the Chinese Communist Party cannot have the graven image of a God hanging over their heads. And so, you know, this is, but the point is that there is this ideological fervor surrounding the torture of this woman's physicist father. And this is, to me, very much akin to what we're seeing today. It gets into what you and I have talked about in the past. You know, it used to be you could go and be left alone.
Right.
Now it is you will be made to care. And now, as we talk about refining, it's not just you will be made to care. You will be made to care or else.
Yeah. And here's the thing. So I could drop this relationship I have with this corporation. You know, I'm fortunate in so much as I don't have to keep them for my livelihood. However, I like the opportunity. I like doing some of the work I do. Here's the irony is that I'm hired by this company to offer my opinion.
Yes.
I am hired to offer my expert opinion and commentary. And I've been doing it now for better than 6 or 7 years. Yeah. And yet the anti-harassment training seminar that I'm forced to take, and so are all the other employees, is at odds with what I say, what I say in terms of my commentary. In fact, what I say in my commentary, which they pay me to give, would be considered deemed harassment. You know, how this organization defines harassment is if a man identifies as a woman and I refuse to use this person's preferred pronouns, then I am guilty of misgendering, and misgendering is bullying and harassment.
Right.
I mean, this to me is insane. It should be the other way. I come to work. I mind my own business. I do my commentary. I offer my opinion. And then why should I be forced to engage in someone else's fantasy?
Well, and more to the point, again,
who's being bullied?
Coming down this road. Well, that's true. But coming down this road, why are we re-entering sex into the workplace is beyond me here. Because again,
Let me ask you a question, Andrew, and for our listeners. So forget me for a second. Let's say you work for any major corporation, because this is now ubiquitous. This has now invaded all the corporate boardrooms. And let's say you and I have daughters. I have a daughter graduating college this year. She's going to go into the workforce. And now, fortunately for her, she's going to teach in a Catholic Christian grammar school. So she's safe from this. But let's say she went to go work for any number of other corporations, and she's in the workplace. And there's a man who identifies as a woman, and this person decides to use the facilities at the office. Many offices. I used to work for a big corporation. They had a gym and gym locker rooms. What if my daughter is subjected to seeing a nude person, a man in a place that should be a safe place for women? This is insanity, and I don't understand why no one thinks about it. Let me tell you this. This is kind of like off the charts in terms of how we think about these things. But we just celebrated Easter, correct?
Yes, I think so.
And Easter is all about, right, the resurrection, but also the prophecies that led to the Messiah and then the resurrection. And then, of course, he will come again. Well, according to the scriptures, according to Revelation, he will come again. And before that, there will be the Antichrist, the tribulation, and these sorts of things. Part of the end times is that you will be forced to accept the sign of the beast, right? 666. And everyone, when you write or talk about this, it's all about this evil entity forcing you to put 666 on your right forearm so you can buy food and you can work. What if it's not going to be so overt, right? The Jews expected, right, from the Christian perspective, the Jews of Jesus' time expected a warrior Messiah. However, if you look at the prophecies, Isaiah in particular, no, he was a suffering servant. And so I would argue the Jews at the time misread the scriptures. What if we're misreading the scriptures today? And what if the sign of the beast is that you have to accept the idea of transgender religion, of the progressive DEI, CRT religion? Here's my point. In scriptures, in the Hebrew culture, the right forearm, the right hand, means your mind. It means what you believe. Yeah. So if accepting the sign of the beast is really accepting a false ideology, then what we're doing in these workplaces is this: are we giving our Christians, people of faith, unknowingly giving their allegiance to a false religion, a false doctrine? Again, I don't understand why nationwide Christians, pastors, priests, congregations aren't standing up and saying, no, you can't force us to accept this false religion, because that's what it is.
I think some of them are. I mean, you know,
I can't, you know, Andrew, here's the thing. I've been looking for days now, some example of someone somewhere who stood up against the corporation and said, no, I'm sorry, for my deep religious conviction. Because remember, federal law protects your religious liberty in the workplace.
Well, I don't know if anybody has, I don't know if anybody has filed suit to, you know, protect.
As far as
as I've told you, I would reach out to the folks of the First Liberty Foundation.
No, but the thing is, why hasn't this been done before?
Well, Jerry, I think part of it is, right, you know, for these folks to, all right, because we're getting very, very far off of where I wanted to go with all of this.
Well, we can go back.
No, yes, I need to remember that I want to go back to something.
All right, I'll remind you.
But the point is that most folks think that if they want to hire a lawyer, they need to have money in order to do that. Most folks don't know about nonprofit entities like the First Liberty Foundation, which are nonprofit legal foundations that represent people. I don't know offhand if First Liberty has represented anybody in a workplace fight to go after this. I just don't know. I do think that this is a conversation that you ought to have with them, generally, just a sort of, you know, whether or not maybe I should bring somebody on board from First Liberty to do a show, or we invite somebody on there for our show. My point in all this is, because I wanted to take the theology out of this for a second, and talk about the general principles that are at work here and how damaging it is to a society overall. That, you know, there are, going back, and again, these are not Judeo-Christian myths, but there are all kinds of stories, all kinds of fables throughout history, which talk about the problems that ensue within a society that removes itself from objective reality, moves further and further away from objective reality, right? It is a circumstance in which, you know, when you become untethered from objective reality, society can no longer function because people, A, can no longer agree on what's real and what's in front of them. You can no longer have progress because progress is hindered because of politics standing in front of them. I'll give you a really good example. In the first 30 years of the Soviet Union, there was an agronomist named Lysenko. He was a biologist named Lysenko. I've talked about this before. And Lysenko didn't believe in the concept of genetics. He said the idea of genetics and the idea that organisms can evolve over time, this stood against Soviet science, which you know was ideology based, and that you needed the intervention of the government, and that it was only through the intervention of the government that you can have these kinds of practices. Let agricultural science be damned. And what happened is that it plunged the Soviet Union into a massive famine in which hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people died. And the Soviet Union, I don't think, ever got out of it. And the point is, again, when you allow ideology to sway objective reality, society can no longer function over the long term. Taking the theology out of it a bit, from a public policy, civil society standpoint, it is a bad idea to remove, whether it's transgenderism and sexuality, so-called sexuality, or whether it is the denial of meritocracy, or whether it is moving us away from pure or at least decently free market economics into an economy in which the government is picking winners and losers, et cetera, et cetera. It's a conversation I had a couple of weeks ago, Jerry, when I was up in New York, right before we had our adventure in Yonkers and in the Bronx. A conversation I had with a colleague in the finance industry, a friend in the finance industry, who was trying to tell me, oh, no, there are very good reasons why these entities are trying to find free market solutions for these environmental problems and creating these new standards. And I objected and offered up some advice.
But I'm sorry, the challenge is that we move toward collectivism. We move toward tyranny, not freedom. Our natural, I disagree with some conservatives who believe that every man yearns to be free. I don't think so. I think every man yearns to be protected, to be safe, to have his needs met. And if you look at all the trends, You know, outside of the American Revolution, in human history, there are, I mean, I'm not even sure I can think of a second time where a country or an entity rebelled against tyranny and well, succeeded.
I mean, the question is in the succeeding. I mean, I would say that the entire struggle of folks to remove the yoke of communism, you know, in both Soviet Russia and elsewhere would be examples of people yearning to be free. I would say, you know, say, you know, to an extent.
Well, Russia has devolved into this, to a tyranny. It's still a tyranny. It's not free. It's certainly not market capitalism.
But Jerry, I think, you know, listen, it's what Reagan warned about, right? We're only one generation away from that tyranny. If you're not teaching people about it, if you're not teaching people how to be free, then, you know, that descends. And, you know, part of it is, it's just what we were just talking about before, is you were talking about in terms of the theological issue and people misreading the signs, right? If you spend 70 years focused on encouraging democracy abroad and not on encouraging freedom abroad, well, once you get democracy without the protection of freedom,
I've
had this conversation a number of times. Let me just add to this, right? To me, for instance, the striving for property rights, right, and gathering whatever resource, nuts, berries, water, food, livestock, whatever, the desire to accumulate those things and protect those things and guard those things, that is something that is inherent instinctually in humans. It happens to be an essential element of freedom. I would say that there was also, conversely, a desire to cooperate with others. But when you blur the idea of what is mine versus what is thine, right, and you no longer protect what is mine and demarcate between what is mine and what is thine, that's when you get the ability of tyranny to take hold. That's what those are my thoughts here.
My last thought on this would be, there are all these movies and there's literature, the end of the world type thing, The Road, and other such things, these zombie movies. And it looks like, well, for the most part, in all this literature and all this movie history, our worst instincts govern us, right? There are roaming gangs, there's cannibalism, there is, rape and destruction and pillage and that sort of thing. And my response to these things has always been, well, I wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I mean, I would organize with my neighbors and form some kind of safety fort, and we'd hunt and we'd protect ourselves and protect our children. But now I'm wondering, I think most people would kill and rape and rob.
I still disagree. I disagree with that. I mean, I think in the end there is a desire. I mean, obviously we would revert to a society in which folks were centered around their villages and they would be cooperative around with the people that I know and along familial lines, right? The inherent distrust of the outsider. But again, that all stems from the property right. And the property right itself extends from, you know, the territorial instinct that people have. That's the situation. Maybe it all extends from territorial instinct. As I sit here to make sure I don't have.
I guess for me, the bottom line is that I don't think that it's in our nature to be good. I think it's in our nature to do bad.
What's the line from Jefferson that if men were angels, no government would be necessary. Yeah. You know, something along those lines. I mean,
which is why it's so disheartening to see how the media doesn't keep government accountable, how the three branches aren't holding the other branch accountable.
Oh my God.
How when we disagree with a Supreme Court decision, it used to be you disagreed with the decision. Now it's the court is not legitimate.
Did you see this colloquy yesterday between Chris Rufo and Mark Cuban?
No, but I like Rufo. He's good.
He's great. He is great. And Mark Cuban is an idiot. And it was just one of these situations where Mark Cuban, who, as we all know, is a billionaire.
Sure.
And one of these billionaire a-holes who thinks he knows everything because he's a billionaire. He was trying to engage in a gotcha moment with Chris Rufo. Chris Rufo, of course, from the Manhattan Institute, right, Jerry?
Sure, yeah, so, the Manhattan Institute. And so, also, Rufo has taken a lead in pushing back against DEI, but also these, you know, gender and race identity.
And this is part of what, this is part of where the situation started, in that Mark Cuban was trying to score hit points off of Chris Rufo on the issue of DEI in corporations. And it launched into a more general discussion of the nature of government, in which Chris Rufo made the accurate observation that what he wants out of life is a bureaucracy that is more in step with what a presidential what a president wants, and not sort of off on its own freelancing or perpetuating itself, which is, again, it gets into what David Bernhardt, who was the Secretary of the Interior, wrote about in his book, You Work For Me, the idea that when a reforming president comes into office and wants to change the bureaucracy tends to either ignore him or do their own thing, and there's very little in the way of accountability that's held. And Mark Cuban turned around and said, well, I see that that's a very, very dangerous stance to try to make these agencies, the bureaucracy, more accountable to the president, because, you know, doesn't Chris Rufo understand the concept of the separation of powers? To which a bunch of folks turned around and looked at this and said, well, clearly Mark Cuban doesn't understand what branch of government the bureaucracy is in. If he thinks that, now we can all go and say, and you and I think have talked about, that the bureaucracy has become a fourth branch of government, responsible only to itself, but that's not the way it's supposed to be. And my point in all of this is that, you know, this is part of the problem that we have in America, is that folks do not understand, well, A, our Republican democracy, as fragile as it is, and the more people who don't understand this, especially those folks who are attempting to flex power, don't understand the way it's supposed to work, the worse off we all are.
I agree, which is why we shouldn't be for power or, you know, political, or for politics, for political reasons, delegitimize institutions that in America have worked well. You know, the courts haven't always got it right. The Supreme Court hasn't gotten it right all the time, but I'm not going to want to destroy the court, because
It gets into, it's the difference between understanding that Justice Roberts was wrong in his Affordable Care Act decisions, right, the NFIB versus Sebelius. He was wrong in that. But to go down there and say that he was wrong because he was being blackmailed, that's a problem.
Yeah.
Right.
I agree. Yeah.
You can,
I guess what it is, and the left is very comfortable with just burning it all down.
Yes.
In order to advance whatever. And again, I say this all the time on the radio show, on WBAL, and that is, we have to look at the left's positions, not as political, but as religious.
Right.
This is why much of their agenda, much of their political philosophy, really is all based on faith.
Not faith in a good way.
They're
to aggrandize or, you know, make people's lives better. But it is based on a faith which is all about the consolidation of power in the hands of a very few. I mean, for the same folks who decry the level of power that the Catholic Church has. Sorry, Jerry, go ahead. Finish with that, because I want to come to a conversation that I had today about something.
Well, I just think, and this is why our public discourse has gone sideways. You know, it used to be we could disagree. I favor more market solutions to healthcare policy, lower taxes, less regulation. I believe in a strong defense, et cetera. And we can have arguments over these things. Today, our politics isn't about just disagreeing. It's about, well, if you disagree with me, you're Hitler. I have to punch you in the face.
Yeah, it's the situation where you believe this. This is the same thing that Donald Trump believes.
Yeah.
Donald Trump is corrupt. He is a predator. He is this. He is that. Therefore, these positions are wrong. There's a logical fallacy in that I don't remember what it is. But there, you know, obviously there's a logical fallacy in it. In the end, it's funny. Because I had a conversation today with something. I've it gets to it gets into something you and I have talked about. Again, this may be the cynical version of the show today, because I got invited to do a TV show today, talk a little bit about the legacy of the Clintons and the Clinton Foundation. This is in the wake of the fact that there was this massive fundraiser over the weekend. For those of you who missed it.
As a side note, though, to that, I'll let you set the stage. With this massive fundraiser, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton, and Joe Biden are together.
Yes, that's my point.
Now, here's the sad part of this, that the Bidens don't realize that putting him next to Bill Clinton and putting him next to Obama makes him look small.
Yeah, I mean, it is election victory uber alles, right? It's get it any way you can. Get him over the finish line.
I get that, but I don't think it worked. I think raising money is good, but I think that it's just a reminder of how Joe Biden, when he had his full faculties, was a liar and an exaggerator. He was really an empty suit, but now he's an empty suit, a liar, an exaggerator, and he's suffering from some kind of dementia. And putting him against two of the most successful communicators in the Democratic Party, two of the most successful presidents,
come election time, come September, no one's going to remember that Joe Biden was on stage with these two guys. No one's going to look at the comparison there.
I see your point. And we're going downfield again, but here's my point is that, look, I don't have many memories of when I was 2 and 3 and 4 years old,
yeah.
But I know that there are kind of emotional or subconscious or memories, because my parents loved me and took care of me and sung to me and ate and fed me and played with me. And I think that there might be some Democrats who vote for RFK Jr. and his new running mate. There might be some Democrats who might vote down ticket, not up ticket, because they viscerally just understand that Biden's not up for the task.
Sure, but I don't doubt that. I don't think it's this fundraiser that's gonna have done it. I mean,
it's this fundraiser and the 1,000 gaffes. You know, yeah. The fact that he took a train over the Key Bridge.
Yeah, I get that. My point in raising this is because I got asked about the Clinton machine today, and I was reminded of this story that was around in 2016, 2015, about, and I'll very much sum it up. The relationship between the Clinton Foundation, the Clinton Global Initiative, Teneo Holdings, which is a for-profit public affairs firm, and Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State. Teneo Holdings, Bill Clinton was the honorary chairman. The CEO was a guy named Declan Kelly. Declan Kelly was at the same time working as a senior aide in the State Department to Hillary Clinton. Anyway, a whole bunch of things that I was reminded of here. And more to the point, I was asked the question as to why things haven't gotten better and why people aren't asking about it. And why isn't Congress asking about it? I said, well, part of it is, Congress engaged in an inquiry on this in 2015, 2016. When Hillary Clinton lost the election, they dropped it like a hot potato, right? There was no point anymore because she didn't win, despite the fact that it was important to get the roots of things. But the point is, in the end, and this is something you and I have talked about, these folks don't want to solve problems. They don't want to solve the problem of Haiti. They don't want to solve problems in Central Europe or in the Middle East, right? That's the other reason why, Donald Trump is such a threat to these guys, is because Donald Trump wants to get things done, right? He wanted to get the Abraham Accords done and get the embassy moved, and wanted to get the various Middle Eastern nations on the same page and recognizing Israel in a way that had never been done before. But of course, there are folks who make huge amounts of money on the world stage. This sounds like a conspiracy theory. I'm going to sound like, a Marxist, circa the, World War I, talking about the Rothschilds, but I don't mean it in that way. But there are folks who do not want to see problems solved. The George Soroses of the world.
Here's the irony with that, and that is the Israeli government has recently put forward a peace plan for a post-war Gaza. And what they're proposing is to have peacekeepers in Gaza made up of three Arab nations or three Muslim nations that recognize Israel's right to exist, i.e., in other words, the Abraham Accord nations. Right. And so Donald Trump, even not in office, but what he did in his administration could lay the groundwork for a peace deal in Gaza. And again, this is what the anti-MAGA movement or intellectuals don't get, and that is there was a lot of good things accomplished in those 4 years. And I think, you know, I'm thinking more and more now that the American people are longing for the peace, the Trump peace years, because we've had nothing but conflict in our own streets and capitals and countries around the world since Biden has come to office. Look, the humiliating surrender of Afghanistan, more now than ever, women and girls can't be champions in their own sports.
Right.
You have the DEI and CRT transgender takeover of almost everything. I think the American people, you know, long for what Grover Norquist used to call the Leave Us Alone Coalition.
Jerry, to circle it back, to bring it back full circle in terms of your offering opinions and your being concerned about this, right? So you have the situation with Riley Gaines.
Right.
You know,
she's the swimmer, you know,
Let's take it away from Riley Gaines and make it even more personal. Let's say that you have one of your children, one of your girls who was not yet out of high school, is playing high school volleyball, and you discover that there is a person on the other team playing against them who is a boy who is now claiming that he is a girl. And this boy spikes a ball at your daughter and injures your daughter. You're not supposed to refer to this person on the air as a boy and by their former boy name. That's
well, again, this is the disconnect, because in the workforce, no, apparently that's bullying and that's harassment, but on the air, yes.
Right. This young person who was raping girls in the Loudoun County, with Loudoun County High School, or was it junior high school?
I forget, but it was in Loudoun County, Virginia,
though. Loudoun County schools, this young person, you're not supposed to reference that they're a boy who is pretending to be a girl.
Again, you know, when if you misgendering someone is considered harassment and bullying.
So, you know, in Baltimore, and I don't know what the Baltimore penal system is doing. I'm not talking about the schools. Let's talk about the penal system for a minute. If there is a violent offender who is a man, and he proclaims that he wants to now be considered a woman and be housed in the woman's jail, this violent offender attacks and rapes women in the jail, you're not supposed to, A, talk about the gender that this person was born as, but you can't talk about it as a policy issue? I mean, that's...
I'll just broadly say what the policy is. Misgendering someone is bullying and harassment, sexual harassment.
I mean, listen, I'll ask a provocative question. Do we know anybody at your workplace like this that is a transgendered individual?
No.
No, we don't know, or no, there isn't one.
Well, I don't know anyone.
Okay.
And I don't think there is anyone.
Okay. So in other words, this isn't even a problem. Right. No.
Here's the other thing too.
Someone at the corporate level, like someone at the corporate parent, or someone at one of the other entities owned by the corporate parent, is excised about something you might have said in the guise of this position. I mean, that's an insane way of doing things, because who's to say that? Anyway, go ahead.
But here's the thing. I understand why a company needs to protect itself from sexual harassment situations. And also I understand why, you know, we need to make sure that people are safe in their work environment. I get that.
Absolutely.
But this is not that. If a man comes to work dressed as a woman, I don't, what's the bullying? Who's being harassed? Right. If I'm forced to entertain this, I'm the one being harassed.
Right.
I'm the one who's being bullied. I'm being forced to, here's the irony, and that is the misgendering isn't me calling he a she.
Yes.
If the he, you, the misgendering,
yes.
The misgendering is me using the wrong pronoun.
Right. Yes.
Forcing me, the misgender, you know, the more I think about it, the more I think I just can't sign off on this.
Right.
I just can't do it.
I, as I've said, you know, in terms of how to proceed, I would seek the advice of someone who understands the law a lot better than I am. I'm not a lawyer. Therefore,
I agree with you. But here's the funny thing, too, is Congress passed legislation that includes sexual identity as a protected class, was it done by regulatory fiat?
I believe it was done by regulatory agencies, Jerry. And that's the thing. I mean, this is where it gets into, you know, this local.
So we're not even respecting the law.
Well, I mean, again, the question, not that we want to bore people with sort of the details of regulatory law, but the question is this permissible under whatever the underlying statute is as far as an interpretation goes?
Now, the state of Maryland might have such a law.
Yes.
You know, I don't know. I just, again, we're moving to a culture where our children are indoctrinated in the early grades and as well as middle school and high school. Universities are
acting. This gets back to what you were talking about in terms of man's striving, you know, whether or not man yearns to be free or whether man yearns to be protected, right?
Or whether or not a man signs off on something that they know to be untrue because man wants to keep his job.
Well, that's right. That's the other part of it, right? It is. I mean, again, you know, folks, I'm getting ready to do this conference this week on free speech in the media. And there is a whole session where we're going to be talking about Orwell and the things that Orwell predicted. So it's the idea of if you change the language, one of the things Orwell talked about in 1984, if you change the language to the point where people do not have the vocabulary to articulate that yearning to be free, well, then they can't articulate it. This is what I was trying to say with, you know, when Reagan talked about, you know, freedom only being, you know, one generation away. You know, if over the course of six decades, you indoctrinate kids and you refine it and you refine it to the point where we cannot agree as a nation as to who we are as a people and where we come from and the principles upon which we were founded and whether or not those principles are good.
And Andrew, to your point, I used to believe that it was very important to read books. Because you can't change the book. It's been published. It's there. Ah. But you know now publishers are going back
100%
and they're changing the language and in many instances, even the meaning of passages and great works of literature because it doesn't match well with the current political religious approval.
Yeah, I don't know about the great works, but I do know that things like Judy Blume, you know, Judy Blume has gone back and changed her books. Other.
No, I'm talking about, I wish I had examples in front of me. I'm talking about authors who are long dead, where the copyright is now in the public domain. Publishers are going back and changing words and changing.
I would like to know what the examples are.
You know, I'll find it. One of the I think it was Chronicles did a piece on this a couple 3 weeks ago. Let me try to find it on our next.
Well, I mean, doesn't that get
podcast? I'll give an update.
Talking about here, which is this issue of again being detached from reality, and having, you know, having this sort of flexible reality causes society to crumble. The reason why these books are great is because of the language that they used and the metaphorical messages that they present. If you change the language,
Andrew,
you know, yes,
I heard someone say this as a joke recently, but it there's a lot of truth in it. So the baseball team, the Cleveland Indians,
yes,
changed their name from the Indians to
The Guardians.
The Guardians.
Yes.
Now, if you know about baseball, you understand that the Cleveland team was originally called the Spiders.
Yes.
The Cleveland Spiders. And because the Spiders were the first team in baseball to have an American Indian as a professional baseball player. In fact, at one point they had more than one player, three or four players who were Native Americans. And because of that, someone kind of quipped in the dugout, hey, we should be called the Indians.
Yes.
And they said, yeah, that's a great idea. Let's call ourselves the Indians. It was a point of pride. It was a point of, we did this first. And so they became the Indians. You know, fast forward to DEI America, and they change it to the Guardians, which is some ridiculous statue on a bridge in Cleveland. And someone said this: why are we going after this team, the Indians, or the Redskins for that matter, with a very similar story in terms of they named themselves the football Redskins because they were honoring Native Americans? But that's not besides the point. This comic said, why don't we go after the Pirates?
Yes.
The Pirates should change their name. Well, why? Well, because what do pirates do?
Right.
They rape and pillage.
Yeah.
I mean, again, this
was that Bill Burr?
It wasn't Bill Burr. It wasn't Bill Burr. It was another comedian who I didn't recognize.
But take a total 30-second digression, and you can make your point.
No,
there's a trailer out for a new movie on Netflix about it's a parody, I think, about the creation of the Pop-Tart and the war between the Pop-Tart and the post-Toasties, starring Jerry Seinfeld and Melissa McCarthy.
Oh, that looks great.
Bill Burr plays JFK, and he's absolutely brilliant as JFK, at least in the trailer. Jerry, go ahead.
Anything that Jerry Seinfeld is in, I'll watch. That's my point. My point is that, you know, we've become lost
over time.
Yeah.
And that's the problem with the, again, I think I made the quote when I was filling in for Tony about the, again, getting back to Orwell and 1984, right? The quote is that there is no past, there is no history, there is only the present in which the party, whatever the party says, is right, right? And that's just it. You know, it's like, I don't know when the last time you read 1984, Jerry, but right, one of the points in it is Oceania at war with East Asia or Eurasia, right? Are they at war with the Russians or the Chinese? And depending on what day of the week it is, you know, they're at war with that. And they've always been at war with either China or Russia. And that's part of it is you can't rely on the past. And if you cannot rely on the past, right, it's not just what is past as prologue, but the whole purpose of education is to build so that you have an understanding of the way the world works. And if all of a sudden, I mean, this is, anyway, we may be circling around something much, much more important, Jerry.
Yeah.
Which is this idea that if people are taught that the world works in a certain way, and then at age 45, all of a sudden, they are told then that the world doesn't work in that way, you can't be surprised when the 45-year-olds or older react with a certain degree of anger and recalcitrance.
Which is in many ways explains the rise of Donald Trump.
I agree wholeheartedly. Right. Yeah. And not just Donald Trump. And I think the kitchen table, you know, sort of mom's movement that's out there as well. You know, it's funny, real quick. I think I mentioned this to you the other day. Maybe I didn't. So there's a controversy in my own backyard here in Williamsburg, where there was a member of the school board, I guess, dealing with some stuff that his own daughter is dealing with, where his daughter is not getting the attention that she needs in class.
You mentioned this to me.
Because the teachers themselves are spending so much time dealing with students for whom English is not their primary language. And so he asked two very basic questions. A, how much of our resources are being dedicated to kids for whom English is a second language? And B, how many of these kids are not present in the United States legally? which are both legitimate public policy questions for someone whose elected responsibility is to govern, to administer and oversee the administration of the local education system. And of course, what happens is that he immediately turns around and gets labeled a racist. This is not a question to be asked. I plan on going to that school board meeting next week on this.
Well, again, that's it. You know, coming back full circle, talking about this training that I have to sign off on. There are segments of it. Look, if this was something I just had to watch, you know, I'd watch it.
Right.
But the problem is that it forces you to interact.
Sure.
And there was one section in particular where it was directed at people of faith. And the question was, and I'm paraphrasing, I'm not doing this verbatim, but the question was essentially, you know, John is no longer John. John is now Jane. Jane prefers the pronoun her and she. What should you do as a person of faith, someone who is a religious person? Should you just use the new pronoun she and her? Should you avoid Jane, not meet with her, not interact with her? Or C, report the incident to HR and complain about Jane? That's it.
Yeah.
Now, there's a right answer. You can't move on. So if I write, I think it's HR, I should complain about this crazy man who now believes himself to be a woman. This is nuts. Go to HR. Wrong answer.
Right.
Well, I'll just ignore her. I won't interact with her. Wrong answer. Because that'll impact this person's progress at the company. So I must, in order to move on in this seminar, I must choose, be respectful and use the new pronoun. There should be a fourth option,
right,
which is respect this person, show this person dignity, and refer to this person by their first name.
What, John or Joan?
Whatever the legal name is, they've now chosen. And if it's Joan or Jane, then do that.
You haven't seen the latest episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm, have you?
I have, yeah. Last night.
The Springsteen one?
Yeah.
Because this is a part of it.
But the irony about that is, as I'm watching it, I'm saying, whoa, wait a minute. You're dead naming this person.
Right. That's the point, though.
They don't even get it right.
Yes. Well, wait a minute. You think that they were putting out the wrong political message?
I think that.
I mean, we can talk about this, folks. If you haven't seen
last, it's called Ken and Kendra. Is the name of the episode. Yeah.
If you haven't seen the Ken and Kendra episode of the Larry David Show,
fast forward.
Pause this. Go watch that, and then come back to the show. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, essentially, so Bruce Springsteen wants to meet.
Larry David,
and
his manager, his
and
agent.
He comes in and meets with him, and his assistant is a guy named Ken.
Yes.
But Ken says, "Oh no, Larry, you and I know each other. 20 years ago, I worked on whatever it was. I worked on 30 years ago. I worked
Seinfeld.
On Seinfeld, and I was Kendra. And apparently, Kendra and Larry would hook up and have." Sexual relations,
sex on the floor. Yeah.
Sex on the floor. and Larry says, well, no, I had sex with Kendra. But then Kendra says, well, Kendra is Ken.
Yes.
And Ken is Kendra. And I'm watching this thinking they're breaking their own rule.
That's exactly right. Yes.
See, I don't think they were doing this on purpose to make a point or to make fun of it. I think they just believe that they can break their own commandments.
See, I don't think so. I don't know. I think this is such a sensitive subject that they had to be making a point here. Though I suppose Bruce Springsteen would not have gotten into it if he see, that's why I don't know if it was.
So I think it was that they're already so steeped in it that they, again, they missed the forest for the trees sort of a thing.
Maybe.
Or they feel that because they're already so woke, so to speak, that they're allowed to joke about this, but no one else can.
Well, and is it that also that Larry is such a horrible... Well, no, see, but that's just it, right? I mean, Larry
got it right.
Larry got it right, according to them.
But Bruce actually said, Ken is Kendrick, Kendra is Ken. So now why isn't Bruce going to be canceled now?
That's my question. Has there been any backlash? Especially
this,
on the
Andrew, all joking aside, this would be a very good Andrew and Jerry Save the World op-ed at Real Clear.
Okay.
Where we just pose this question. You know, why is it that Bruce Springsteen could dead name someone on Larry David, Curb Your Enthusiasm, but if anyone else did this, they would be canceled, they would be ostracized, whatever.
Well, listen, I like it. If you got time to start drafting it, I'll sign on.
I know we got to wrap it up, but you know, there are a lot of things like this that really concern me because we don't have honest conversations. Like, you know, again, there news this week that an Israeli rocket hit aid workers in Gaza.
Right.
The famous chef, his food outreach.
Jose Andres.
Right. And I'm thinking to myself, this is horrible. It's terrible. Loss of life, innocent life, people who are trying to make a difference and help others. But the fact of the matter still is if Hamas surrendered, this would end. But there is not one entity in the world, including the United States, that has pressured Hamas to surrender.
Well, especially when we're, you know, telling our UN people to not vote on, you know, to
right. But my point is that, you know, and it goes to conversations we've had. We can't get into this now, but I think half measures cause more death. I think half measures, like
this gets into
Ukraine,
the conversation you and I had about Ukraine yesterday.
Yes.
Why is it? And what we've said multiple times before. You know, why are there still sanctions that we could pull out? Why haven't we bottomed out, you know, the Russian oil market? All of these.
Why hasn't Ukraine put special forces to attack infrastructure in Russia?
Right. And the answer becomes, well, there are some folks who want to see it perpetuated. That's all we can come back to.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, again, everything comes back to Star Trek. It's like that Star Trek episode.
Which one?
Where the Federation officers were trapped on the Enterprise with Klingons, and there was an entity that made sure that there was equal balance.
A balance of terror.
Yes.
Yes. So it's funny. Just real quick on the Star Trek thing, because I know you watch The Next Generation. So I frankly was using the facilities last night. My wife calls me. She goes, oh, I just made a discovery about...
But you're in the bathroom and your wife calls you?
She yelled. She yelled to me. She didn't call me on the phone.
See, that would bother me. Don't talk to me when I'm in the bathroom.
Well, okay. So the point is, I she says, I'll tell you when you're done. I come out and she's like, do you know who the Chinese scientist is? From this three body problem, like the lady who's the head of the pro alien people. I said, yeah, it's Keiko from Next Generation and Deep Space Nine. She goes, wait, what? You knew this and you didn't tell me? I'm like, yeah, I knew it immediately knew it when I saw her. It's Keiko from Next Generation. She's in it, by the way. I think she's in it. And you never watched Game of Thrones, so...
Yeah, I did. I ended up watching
it. So the Onion Knight is in it, Davos Seaworthy, and Samwise Tarly, whatever his name is in it. It's good. It's definitely the one to watch. Jerry,
all right.
You got a show on Sunday, maybe.
Maybe, yes.
If it's Sundays, it must be Jerry.
It is. Because we have real good listeners here. Governor Wes Moore has now contacted WBAL several times to complain about my show.
Oh, okay. We're gonna talk about this.
Why not? I'm gonna talk about it on Sunday. And management at WBAL is concerned about this. Now, my reaction is that this is good news. We're having an impact. The governor is listening. He's being held accountable. Everything I say is factual. There's something wrong when the governor of a state believes that he or she, in this case, that his staff can intimidate a station to silence a contrarian voice. And you know, what I've told WBAL management is that no one else in the state is holding this guy accountable. Listen, literally, no one's holding him accountable.
I will say this to you, and I would also in whatever memoranda you prepare for management, I would do what I thought you should have done the first time. I would tell them what I thought you should have said on the air, which is you say to management, imagine if we were in a red state and one of your progressive hosts was talking about the red state governor, and the red state governor picked up the phone and called the program director, news manager, whatever the hell he is, and said, or his communications person said, I don't like what your host is saying about the governor's position on something. What would your reaction be? Would your reaction be to go and tell the host to moderate his language based upon the red state governor's complaint? Or would you immediately turn around and do a news story? Red state governor,
right,
complains about this and is trying.
But this is the problem, right? This is the problem when journalists don't see themselves as verifiers of truth.
I have nothing. I'm sorry, Geraldine, that I just dropped the F-bomb. I'm gonna get on. I have nothing to lose with these people anymore. I have absolutely nothing to lose with these people. I've reached out. I've tried to be, you know, conciliatory to the management at WBAL. I have offered things up. I am still on good terms with a great many people on the staff. I've talked a little bit about what happened. I'm not going to get into that now. The bottom line here is that you, management of WBAL, have an absolute obligation to protect the First Amendment rights of your on-air employees. The folks who go on the air, and especially if they're opinion folks. Jerry knows he's not a news journalist. He's not doing a news program. He's doing an opinion program. You're paying him for his opinion. He has listeners because of his opinion. That's what you want. That's what a news talk station wants. That's why you hire people. His listeners understand if he's moderating his rhetoric, that's the surest thing. Now, maybe you want him to lose ratings. That wouldn't surprise me if you wanted him to go down that road. But the bottom line here is, as a news talk entity, you should be offended at the highest level that anybody in government is going to try to flex their muscle to get your opinion people to change their opinions that they're moderating. In the same way that it was fundamentally inappropriate for the Baltimore State's Attorney's Office to file a complaint with the FCC against Fox 45. And see, I can say Fox 45 because I'm not on WBAL. In the same way, that was a fundamental violation of that station's First Amendment rights. This is a fundamental violation of Jerry Rogers and, frankly, by extension, WBAL's First Amendment rights. Sorry,
Look, I agree with you. And the thing is that, let me say this. Matt Taibbi,
yeah,
just received a journalistic award from Real Clear Politics for his reporting, even though there's pressure to censor him.
Right.
And Matt Taibbi is a leftist.
Right.
And now he's getting pushback. Taibbi is that he's reporting on X and not reporting on Y. In other words, he's calling out Democrats and Biden for censorship. But what about Trump? And what about Matt Gaetz? And what about Marjorie Taylor Greene and whatever they're up to? And his response was twofold. He said, well, number one, there are armies of journalists who are already going after MAGA.
Right.
There's no one going after
100%
Biden. So I'm going after the one where no one else is holding this person accountable. And the second thing was, I've earned my chops. I can report on and I can report in a manner in which I think is best because I've earned it.
But
that's my thing here. You know, I've nearly 30 years of experience in public policy. I work for some of the most prestigious news aggregators and opinion sites in the country. And I know how to talk about these issues.
Right.
And my ratings reflect that.
Absolutely. Again.
Anyway,
because it in the end. Listeners know when a host is not, but even if a host announces that they're pulling punches, audiences can understand that if they announce it at first.
Right.
But if a host comes on one week and says something and then the next week has to moderate his or her rhetoric for no reason, audiences notice that. And that's just it. Remember, right? Good Lord, the many conversations, the many incredibly frustrating and backwards conversations and contradictory conversations I've had with management. The one truism that I thought we all could agree on is that listeners want a host to have a perspective. That's what you're being hired for. Now, if you don't want that perspective anymore, fine. Wash your hands of the situation, right? That's perfectly acceptable. If you want to take your station in a different direction and you don't want that perspective, but don't wimp out on it and worse, turn around and put the onus on the host to moderate their rhetoric or else. Otherwise, why are you in this business? Right? If you're in this business because you want to make nice with the prevailing power structure, then you're part of the problem. Because that's not the role of the Fourth Estate. It's never been the role of the Fourth Estate. The Fourth Estate is supposed to hold the powerful accountable.
Right. I agree. Anyway,
sorry. I just...
But censorship is...
Going to a conference on this. This may or may not come up at this conference in the next couple of days.
But censorship...
Also, this may be part of an op-ed that I've written.
But for our audience, censorship is a real... problem, and it happens in all kinds of ways. Again, to your point, you know, I have a certain way of talking about certain issues, and why I'm effective in talking about these issues is because of the way I talk about them.
Right.
And I talk about them in a way after 30 years of experience, but being told that, well, you could, oh, Jerry, we don't want to tell you what to say. We would never do that. But Jerry, it's how you say it. And to me, that is just subtle censorship.
Remember, Jerry, Imus doesn't say the offensive thing. He says it in a character. Yes.
And the bottom line for me is no one in the state of Maryland is holding Governor Westmore accountable for some of the more radical positions
Let's be really clear about something. Jerry is not talking about... And has in fact said just the opposite about Westmore and the DEI bridge and Westmore and Brandon Scott being the DEI politicians. Jerry has in fact said that those things are idiotic to say.
Right.
This is about issues having to do with life and choice and Maryland being an abortion sanctuary state and just what that all means. Jerry, listen, we are
right. Yeah, we're way over.
So Sunday. You may or may not be back on the
air. I'll be on.
I am off to Savannah, Georgia, to a conference on free speech and the media. Brand new episode of The Lunch Hour is up. It's got Frank Gaffney talking about the World Health
Blast Organization. From the past.
Yes, blast from the past. Talking about natural asset companies, but talking about some really dangerous stuff happening at the World Health Organization. So go and check that out. Jerry, how about you? You've got a new episode dropping tomorrow?
We have a new episode dropping tomorrow on the Business of America. Kirsten Axelson, we talk about innovation. We go after and look at the vaccine issue. But even more than that, we look at how health policy really ought to be more bipartisan. But because of the nature of our debate, where we want to be more provocative, we want the gotcha moment. It's not, and it's too bad. And I tell you, right,
the worst thing to happen to American politics.
Yeah, and Kirsten's brilliant too. It's a really good 30 minutes. It's great.
Jerry, what do you want folks to do?
Find the truth, plant your feet if you still can, and stand firm. God bless you.
Have a great week, everybody. Have fun, and please stay safe.